President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour on this May the 20th on the West Coast, now May the 21st on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network, and we're sure you're going to find tonight's show not only unusual, but interesting. What's the news? Well, we keep hearing all the spin about all the evil people running countries in the Middle East and how we have to stop terrorism when we know who the terrorists are. We've told you over and over again. It's quite evident that it's the government. There's a very interesting article written by Lou Rockwell talking about the difference between libertarianism and politics, as usual, and he describes the fact that we don't really pay attention to anything that's going on, but both sides, both the Democrats and the Republicans, have just pushed the Patriot Bill through for another 4 years again, as if nothing's wrong. Then again, we have to remind ourselves that it was the Republicans that pushed it through in the beginning. Even though they didn't have a majority, this was done on behalf of the usurper-in-chief. We've questioned if this individual is even a human being. And we're going to discuss this reality of who the aliens are on this planet and the proof that has come forth to show that we have good people, visitors, if you would like to call them visitors. And I'm referring to the people known as the United Galactic Federation, Galaxy of Hendon. And we have reptilians and greys and Nordics. Some claim that there are people living inside the Earth, deeper than the underground bases, and have been for even thousands of years. I'm not sure that I buy that. My intuition tells me that it's just another dialectical argument and has no substance in truth. Yet there are plenty coming forth talking about Mother Gaia. They're calling the planet Gaia. And the word Gaia actually describes the daughter of chaos in Greek mythology. But then again, is Greek mythology really mythology, or is it the same as the term conspiracy theory? Mythology and theory seem to have taken a parallel in modern times. I would say that the Greek writers actually were speaking the truth, and they had to hide the fact that it was the truth, so they told us it was mythology. Now, in regard to what we're going to talk about, we're going to recap some of the evidence that came out last night, thanks to Ken Adachi and Zora Nova Star Livingstone, their insight, their intuition, and Ken's wonderful journalism in helping me expose the government hacks that have come out to try to discredit the Planet Belkwe photos. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about other anomalies that are occurring either in space or right here on the planet. And we're just going to further prove that what we're telling you is the truth. These are things that are going on around us, and the only thing we have to do with it is we're pointing out the truth. Now, there's a minister in Southern California, in the San Francisco area, I believe. It might be San Diego. Harold Camping, he's supposed to have 55 radio stations that his ministry owns. I've never heard him on one, but that's the story. And he's made predictions that the Earth was going to end, life on Earth was going to end, and we're approaching that actually on Sunday, the 22nd. Now, this is an Illuminati numerological date that they like to use for their rituals, so it doesn't surprise me that someone masquerading as a messenger of God's word, a teacher of God's word, has mathematically calculated that the world is going to end the day after tomorrow or on Sunday. So maybe we should start off with a song by Joey DeFrancesco and a gentleman named Joe Dogs, who is going to sing All or Nothing at All.
Nothing at all. Half of love never appealed to me. If your love never could yield to me, then I'd rather have nothing at all. Oh, if it's love, there is no in between. Why begin, then cry for something that might have been? No, I'd rather have nothing at all. But please don't bring your lips so close to my cheek. Or I'll be lost beyond recall. The touch of your hand, the look in your eyes makes me weak, and my heart, my throat dizzy and full. And if I fell under the spell of your call, I would be caught in the undertow. So you see, I've got to say no, no, all or nothing at all. Thank you.
Joey DeFrancesco, or Francesco, DeFrancesco, and Joe Dogs. Joe Dogs. You ever heard of Joe Dogs before? Well, I think all or nothing at all is the way to call out Harry Camping on his prediction that the world will come to an end on May 22nd, 2011. And with that, I guess if this is my final show, then this is my final guest, and I'll bring him back on board. He's my regular co-host weekly on Friday nights. He's a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, my good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Don. That means a lot, considering I'll never see you again.
Yeah, to think they wasted all that money on the bailouts, you know.
Well, I'm also brokenhearted because an awful lot of work I have left to do, you know. And I'm hoping to get it done before the apocalypse struck.
Yes. Well, I was referencing something at the top of the show, Jim. I'm sure you heard me, and I want to thank you for your patience and waiting to come on board tonight. You know that I published some photographs on my website back in June 2009, about a week or so after receiving these and a phone call to my Evident Footprints radio show here on bbsradio.com from the United Galactic Federation, General Jeremiah, who is the commanding officer of Project Alliance for the United Galactic Federation Galaxy of Hendon. And these are our friends. They've been doing a number of humanitarian rescues during earthquakes and disasters that have been occurring around the planet over the years. And it's come to my attention, and I brought it to the listening audience attention after General Jeremiah's first call. And it seemed like it was about 6 weeks or so, and Ken Adachi and I and some other people got these very, very peculiar emails where people were accusing me of having lifted these photographs off of websites. In the most ridiculous situations that they described, and when they provided links, and all the emails had the links to these websites, which were alleged to be in Russia or in Nicaragua, and in other words, the photos that I took were taken allegedly by other professional photographers and then posted on these iStock websites and photo blogs where they admire each other's work. And they were just snuck in there in between some pictures of flowers and trees. And then the email started accusing me of having stolen my own photographs. I say my photographs. They were given to me by the Federation. Photographs, 26, depicting the planet Balqui. And then we got more recently, another rash of emails. So you're talking roughly 2 years later, we're getting the same sequence of emails from people still alleging that that Ken Adachi is being played for a fool, and I possibly may have been duped by General Jeremiah, and that this is all a big hoax, and Ken should really watch out for himself. And I submitted some factual proof to Ken that you can look at the language in the photographs and show that they're different, that mine are consistently in, let's say, an alien language, and theirs suddenly have various versions of Photoshop in the headers of these documents with large gaps, which indicate that they layered photographs, for example, with watermarks that they placed on the photographs, or completely altered to make it look like I had stolen one picture out of a whole sequence of pictures that this photographer allegedly took. And we're going to release more information down the road on as to who these people are, but we debunked the story just on the basis of the information that Ken published of my PDF versions of the photographs and one of the photographs that I received out of the 26. It's a very interesting article, very well thought out by Ken. And basically, he wrote it in answer to an email he received where, again, the accusation and the warnings to him to be careful not to get hoodwinked and, you know, don't you find that to be a pattern that certain scientists experience when they come out with some new information, a new discovery, or a new invention? In all the years you've experienced what you do.
Well, I have to be honest with you. Nobody has ever, you know, come out and threatened me or given me any kind of shellacking in any way, shape, or form. But I have certainly heard of others being treated that way. And in some cases, depending on what it is that they are revealing, it's even gone so far as to have actual death threats. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not unfamiliar with this type of treatment. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Well, you can recall some weeks ago I described a piece that I had published by NASA, where they were describing these experiments that one of their scientists was conducting with a piece of meteorite. And he discovered a worm that had hitched a ride on the meteorite. And this was now possible proof that there was intelligent life elsewhere in the universe. Now, I don't know if they gave the worm an IQ test or not, but how does a NASA scientist determine that a worm is intelligent, especially when it's attached to a meteorite? I mean, you get the point.
If you hadn't attached him to the meteorite, I might have ventured an answer to that. But
well, go ahead. Pretend I didn't.
Well, I mean, they could certainly give him the same IQ test that they give all the politicians. You know, that would have worked.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he was implying that the worm actually designed and built the meteorite, and it was its own version of a spaceship. Do you think the NASA scientists meant that, or is that a stretch?
Well, I certainly don't think that they meant that, because one of the primary arguments that they always use when it comes to the discussion of intelligent life is that it would have to have some sort of hands with opposing digits in order to be able to make anything. Otherwise, it wouldn't necessarily be able to demonstrate the intelligence that it did have.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, there are some other examples of ridiculous statements that NASA has made. One, actually, I feature in the little documentary film that I made of General Jeremiah's first call to this show on May 29th. That's just 8 days. It will be the second year anniversary, 8 days from now. May 29th of 2009, he called into the show, and you were the guest on that show.
Yeah, I remember it very clearly, but we're never going to reach that anniversary date to realize that.
No? Yeah, Sunday will be the last day. Yeah, thanks for reminding me. So, anyway, well, let's say the 29th would have been the anniversary, the second anniversary. there are various videos taken of the space shuttle out in space viewing what appears to be an intergalactic war going on around the planet.
I've seen some of those. They're amazing.
Yes, and the numbers that I can pull off the top of my head, I think, are STS-48, STS-75, STS-80. I saw something really strange in STS-101, which I think was around 1999, and I'd seen it on satellite TV, a triangular craft that was doing somersaults or cartwheels, if you want to call it that, while the space shuttle was flying over China. Once they realized they were picking this up in the camera, they quickly turned the camera so you couldn't see it because they knew it was going live over the airwaves. And they didn't even talk about that. But in these other videos that I've referenced, and there's probably some other ones as well, where these craft are stopping on a dime and taking off at thousands of miles an hour, outrunning laser weapons that are being fired from what appears to be either Earth's surface or off camera, maybe possibly out in space by another craft. And they avoid the beams, of course. And then they engage with the astronauts in a conversation about ice crystals. They call these ice crystals. And then there's the tether incident. I can't remember if that's 121, STS-121. They have this 15-mile-long tether, and the craft are coming all around it, hundreds of them. And they're referring to this as ice crystals again. Now, I've got a clip I'd like to play for you, and I'd like to get your comments. This clip came from the Cassini telescope as it was passing the rings of Saturn. And this was on July 25th, 2004. This is a video clip, so I'm going to narrate the portions that are actually appearing on screen here so the people understand why there's so much silence involved. A little bit of background music as well. This is called Alien Speech, found in NASA's Saturn radio signal. And this is Saturn's radio signal. The radio emissions were discovered by radio and plasma wave detectors on board the Cassini spacecraft as it passed over Saturn's rings during its arrival at the planet in July 2004. Tones are emitted as radio waves. Don Gurnett of the University of Iowa says his team reduced their frequencies by a factor of 5 to bring them into the range of human hearing. Gurnett says he was completely astonished when he heard the musical notes. The tones are short, typically lasting between 1 and 3 seconds, and unlike the ethereal sliding tones associated with other cosmic processes, every one is quite distinct. The evidence suggests that each tone is produced by the impact of a meteor on the chunks of the planet's rings. The same radio signal, now in pitch by 12 tones, cool edit, audio editor raised. NASA's quote on file. A most intriguing file. We don't know what to make of it. Jim, you've seen ice crystals before. I don't know that you've heard them, but what is your interpretation of what you heard? Are those ice crystals?
Well, I never heard, like, you were absolutely correct. I never heard ice crystals do anything. Ice cubes will sometimes make some noises when you put them in a drink, and that's about the extent of that. But I can tell you what some of that sounds like. Some of it sounds like a modulated signal. The other thing that's interesting is that there's an upgrading tone at the end of almost each one of those clips.
Yes.
It kind of represents like a sliding tone.
A portamento.
With an increasing frequency.
Yeah.
And that I recognize from some of my own research that I was doing with Tesla equipment here on Earth. Some of that sounds very similar to what they call whistlers. And a whistler is it's a signal that's generated by a charged particle that's literally spinning down a line of magnetic force as it enters the Earth's atmosphere. But it's a shame that the signal didn't have a little bit more resolution, because if there is a voice pattern or any kind of a intelligent modulation to it, it would be interesting to bring that forth.
Well, this is a scrambled signal, I've been told, and that was coming from the Alliance spacecraft, instructions to the other craft flying around in the vicinity of planet Earth. So the explanation, again, from NASA is utterly ridiculous. Now, who would want to stop that information from, besides the government, from coming to the people, to the consciousness of the people? And we've been saying, you and I and others, over and over, for 4 years on this show, would be the reptilians would be the most interested in hiding that information. Now, that's not to say that the reptilians are the only ones here. The draconians, which are the winged reptilians, the upper class of them, if you want to call them that, and they're that it's all fiction, that none of it's real. Fine, let them tell us that. I have another clip I would like to play for you. Now, we've proven that there's reptilian language in some recordings, and this is one such recording. There's a newscaster in Los Angeles, then a newscaster in Wisconsin, and another newscaster affiliated with a Toronto, Ontario, Canada TV station, who is himself stationed remotely in Japan, giving a report. And all three of these people start speaking what most would call gibberish during their live interview segments as field reporters, responding to the beck and call of the studio anchor. And I'd like to play this for you. I may even play this twice so you can actually study what you're hearing. Since the last time I played this, which was around a month ago, I've cleaned it up a little bit, and it's a lot more discernible, we'll say. I'll let it speak for itself.
Anson is live at the Staples Center with highlights and backstage coverage we're seeing for the very first time. Saree.
Well, a very, very heavy debatation tonight. We had a very Darrison fight. Let's go ahead, Terrace Chasing looks for the bit. They had the pet.
Gazette. Thanks, Margo. Well, Wisconsin has officially joined 25 other states in a lawsuit against President Obama's health care reform law. Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen says Wisconsin is the latest state, including Iowa, Kansas, Maine, Ohio, and Wyoming, to join Florida's suit. The states claiming the exorcist saw Unchisracho and Palais Brienritz by health urgent. President Obama will head to the...
So if it takes ground forces, it's going to be at ground forces.
Meaning it may have only just begun. Mark McAllister, Global News.
Now, Defense Minister McCain McLeod did confirm today that more than 54 18 fighter jets are spending about as much as 20 and ready to assist the 100 deployed over the amount needed. Now, it did depend that how the NOLAN remerges RN, while the university or the UN mission as whole received support from all batteries in the hues of the gardens of today. Excuse me. I'll hand it back to you.
Thank you, Mark McAllister from Japan tonight.
Okay. You have to admit that's rather strange. Was it feeding? Was it feeding time, do you think? In other words, were we listening to vocalized shape-shifting going on. that is reptilian, by the way. It's been identified as such. So, your comments.
Well, it sounds like the sample that was the longest was the first person.
Mm-hmm.
I have to admit, it is pretty weird. I would really like you to play it again, if you don't mind, just so I could tune in on it a little bit more closely. But, I mean, what is there to say? I have not yet had Reptilian 101.
Well, you have now. Or at least you had orientation. Okay, this is the first class here, Jim. All right. Here we go.
Hansen is live at the Staples Center with highlights and backstage coverage we're seeing for the very first time. Saree.
Well, a very, very heavy debertation tonight. We had a very Darrison bite. Let's go to Terrace Chasen for the bet. They had the pet.
Gazette. Thanks, Margo. Well, Wisconsin has officially joined 25 other states in a lawsuit against President Obama's health care reform law. Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen says Wisconsin is the latest state, including Iowa, Kansas, Maine, Ohio, and Wyoming, to join Florida's suit. The states claim in the exorcist saw Unchisracho and Pelay Bringritz by health urgent. President Obama will head to the...
So if it takes ground forces, it's going to be at ground forces.
Meaning it may have only just begun. Mark McAllister, Global News.
Now, Defense Minister McCain McLeod did confirm today that more than 18 fighter jets are spending about as much as 20 and ready to assist the 600... 10 mission has whole received support from all batteries in the hues of the gardens of today. Excuse me. I'll hand it back to you.
Thank you, Mark McAllister from Japan tonight.
Okay. First of all, the first one was the Grammy Awards, if I remember correctly. It's either the Academy Awards or the Grammy Awards. And it was total gibberish. What did that woman say? The second one, as she went on, the one in Wisconsin, tripped over some words. But the last guy sounded like he was trying to ice skate. Welcome back to Evident Footprints, ladies and gentlemen. We experienced technical difficulties. I was talking, and suddenly we were cut off and had a bit of difficulty. Hope you hung in there. If you're listening right now, then you did. If you're listening to the archive, you were spared the inconvenience of a couple of minutes of silence. Do we have Jim Murray back with us? I guess not yet. I guess we're trying to get him on board as well. Okay. Okay, very good. We're going to get in touch with Jim here in a moment. So hang in there, folks. Hello, Jim. We're trying to reach you, so hang up and Don's going to call you, okay? All right, bye. All right, just so you know, that was Jim Murray calling. He was concerned because we went off air. So anyway, welcome back to the show. I was just about to get some feedback from Jim. Isn't it interesting when so much truth comes out in one show, how they have to stop it? They have to interfere with it. It's obvious. It's quite obvious. We have photographs. We've debunked the claims that the photographs are stolen from me. They've been stolen from me, but the claim that I stole them from fictitious people is absolutely ridiculous. And like people are going to go browsing Nicaraguan tourist sites for pictures of the planet Balqui. it's crazy. But hopefully, as soon as we get everything back up and running at PBS Radio, we'll have Jim Murray back on the show with us. Maybe what I'll do for a couple of minutes is he's back. Very good. Okay, Jim, welcome back to the show. Did you get to hear the clip the second time?
I got to hear the clip the second time. Actually, where we were disconnected was when you said your last words that I heard were in the case of the guy at the in the last clip, he sounded like he was ice skating. That was got out of it.
Ice skating up an escalator.
Oh well, of course I didn't get that part.
Yeah, yeah. His speech was very stuttered, and he was searching for words to say while he was reading a script. That's what's crazy about it, is he had trouble differentiating between the word UN and university. So obviously, someone or something was playing with his mind, or he was shifting between two realities, like a shapeshifter does, and just went haywire. Could have been a hybrid gone haywire, but I was seeking your comments on that at the time
The only thing I noticed that you could say was common to all three clips was the fact that just before they started into that weird speech pattern, there was the sound of like some form of interference, whether it was something being switched on or something being injected into the normal signal. I'm not sure, but it was very distinct. And as soon as you heard that, then it was followed momentarily by the gibberish. So
yeah.
I'm not really sure what that means, to be honest with you, whether somebody was electronically modifying the signal or whether something electronic that was interfering with their mind was also picked up on the tape. But you can definitely hear it.
Well, if you see the video, you can see their lips moving and you can see them becoming extremely agitated. All three are on camera. You know, they're doing these cameo pieces on site, and that's supposed to add some sensationalism to the fact that they're doing this story. The fact that the first girl just broke into complete gibberish, this was what was coming out of her mouth. This was not any modification of the signal, of the audio signal. The second one, she seemed to sort of carry on with the theme, and then suddenly these reptilian words started coming out every so often, and then you can see her getting upset by it. To where she just stopped. She broke down and stopped. The last guy said some really crazy things, partial sentences, dangling participles, misreading of the teleprompter, and just tripping all over himself until toward the end he just started speaking reptilian. and then he apologized for it. Now, I find that all very strange. What did he think was going on, do you suppose?
Well, that's, you know, that's pretty difficult to even imagine. But if he was in an altered state or if he was in any kind of another reference frame mentally, you know, the only thing he might really have imagined that I can put a finger on would be that he was out of it for a minute. He may not even realize what he said.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
because he apologized. I mean, that's, you know, in itself, that's a pretty weird thing right there when you stop and think of it. The girl who just sort of tried to carry on and ignored her own utterings was actually a much more natural response in a certain way, because when somebody flubs up on live coverage, you know, that's exactly what they try to do. They try to minimize the realization, the audience's realization that something was wrong. But by apologizing, the other guy actually draws attention to the fact that all is not well, which is kind of strange.
Yes.
To say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So here now we have proof of conversation going on in a scrambled radio signal, and it's being described as ice crystals scraping across the rings of Saturn as the example, the cause of the sound that you heard, which was definitely a speech pattern. In fact, it was a scrambled speech pattern from a mothership to a bunch of other satellite ships that were flying around space. It's normal communications going on. And they know that, but they have to put a cover story out to lie about it. I didn't record these alien speeches given by the newscasters. Someone else did. I retrieved it and tried to clean it up a little bit and level out the audio as much as was possible. But I found it interesting that that person identified the newscasters as reptilians. Found that very interesting that they did, because I feel they're 100% correct. Now, here we have several different examples of some really crazy stuff that's going on. And every time we get an explanation from the government or their intelligence minions, their hacks, their agents, disinfo creeps, whatever you want to call them, we get the same ridiculous explanations for something as simple as receiving a photograph and posting it on a website. And with an explanation, you know, why all the ridiculous stories? Are the people that brainwashed, that they can't think clearly enough to realize somebody's lying, and then to prove it in writing, to prove it in a document by converting both photographs to a document that can be read and examined for inconsistencies? Okay? And actually, Ken Adachi has that posted on his website. So anyone that would like to read up on that, go to educate-yourself.org, click on current news and scroll down to latest articles. It's called General Jeremiah and Balqui Photos. And read an email that one of Ken's longtime devoted readers sent him, and then read what Ken had to write and see if you come to a similar conclusion that you may have come to after having listened to the clips I just played. Jim, any comment you would like to make in that regard before we move on to another topic would be most appreciated.
Well, first of all, I'm a little bit astonished, to be honest with you, about the limpness of some of the explanations. Like, you know, if you follow any of the information regarding the planetary discoveries, you know that the rings of Saturn are not solid disks that are sitting up there. And so if an ice crystal goes across, it's kind of like rubbing your fingernails across a blackboard or something. I mean, they're composed of millions of particles of various things that have gotten granulated and situated themselves, you know, around the planet. So how does an ice crystal interact with a million fragments of stone or rock or whatever the material is and produce that strange screeching sound? I mean, it's not even well researched. I'm sure that anybody with half a brain could have come up with a better explanation.
Yeah. Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
It is kind of strange, you know, like, I don't know anything about that particular, you know, declaration from NASA, but it would be interesting to know who actually released that. I mean, if that was like a head scientist or, you know, a spokesman for the entire organization, I would find that really disquieting because it makes me say to myself, what kind of lunatics are running the organization?
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if it was some flunky that's just asked to deliver a verbal message, you know, I could accept that a little bit more readily. But nonetheless, whoever generated the explanation didn't do a very good job, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was downloaded. The person that made this little video downloaded it off of a website that belonged to, guess what, JPL and NASA. saturn.jpl.nasa.gov/news/press-release-details.cfm?news?id=589. That's the web address. And there were graphs posted on the website dated July 25th, day 207 of Cassini's voyage, I guess, and the year 2004. So they posted it. That's what's ridiculous about it, is that they would first say it's ice crystals and say they don't know what to make of it. Well, you just said it was ice crystals. Excuse me. We have that short of memory that we can't remember a minute later what they said. But nevertheless, it's a cover-up. And it's not just the things that are going on in space that have been covered up. I know you have researched anthropology. You've always had an interest in anthropology. And I know that you have something to share in that regard. How's that for a segue?
Well, yeah, the reason why I was even thinking about it was because, you know, with all of this clamor that's going on about the oncoming date of December, whatever it is, 22nd or 23rd, 2012. 21st. The official, I'm sorry, 2012, of being the official end of the planet as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
I just muse on things like that quite a bit and wonder, you know, what all could really be happening. And, you know, one of the things that crosses my mind are I try to put pieces together that are floating around that I'm aware of and make some sense out of it. But years ago when I was actually I was in college at the time that I was working with Ivan Sanderson. And Sanderson had a very good friend who was also a naturalist and did a lot of work for zoos in Europe. And I believe he was living in Switzerland at the time. But anyway, he wrote a book called On the Track of Unknown Animals. And then there was another guy who wrote a book called Still Alive. I don't remember the second author's name, but the first guy was Bernard Houvelmont. And they both talk about this interesting tribe of some sort of beings that are living in the mountainous regions of southern Mongolia and other places in Central Asia, mostly mountainous country, and they refer to themselves as the Alma. And the reason I find this interesting is it's not just a question of another Yeti story or another abominable snowman story or a wandering Sasquatch that somebody sees, you know, once in a blue moon. Mm-hmm. I think there's some credence to all of that stuff. But the reason that this particular tale is of interest is because the local people in those regions who are modern-day Homo sapiens are well aware of these other type of people that seem to be living in their midst, even to the point where they have bartered with them, traded, more modern cookware, for instance, and knives and pieces of metal and things like that to them in return for game and, you know, whatever else these people can conjure up to trade. And that's been going on for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a lot of interactions with these more primitive types. And there's been some photographs, there's been some sketches, there's been a lot of descriptions. And apparently they're tall, stocky people. They have thicker craniums. They're covered with a kind of a reddish fur. And they live very primitive lives, but they keep to themselves. They're not aggressive or anything of that sort. And most scientists will, you know, dismiss all this with an air of impossibility. But the few that have taken the time to examine the records have come to the conclusion that either it's some sort of form of surviving Neanderthal, or it could fall into the category, some people think, of a sample of Homo erectus, which is supposedly the species that predated Homo sapiens. And then there's even one line of thought that maybe they're actually very primitive Homo sapiens that are not, for some reason, did not follow the standard course of evolution. But the reason that I bring it up is because we know from thousands of reports around the world that these things are definitely, there's something out there. Let's put it that way.
Well,
but the thing about the Alma that's interesting is that it's all in this one area, and there's quite a substantial population of them. And this brings to mind a story that Colonel Fossett told of a very similar nature in the Mato Grosso region of Brazil, where he encountered white natives that had Caucasian features, that were living in isolated groups, still very primitive in their behavior and in their dress, but nonetheless not of the same anthropological category as the surrounding natives. And he came to the conclusion that this was a vestige of an earlier civilization that was destroyed. And some of the people who survived just went on to regress and live a very primitive form of life. And it could very well be that that's the case with these Alma people. Now, if you put that together in its obvious order, it seems to suggest that there was a destruction of some type in the past. Which, of course, is things that we have talked about on other shows.
Have you considered, Jim, or have any of those that wrote about this considered that it would have been cloning? Let's say they discover the remains, the skeleton of a Neanderthal man. What would prevent them from cloning it? The same type of creature is up on Mars. I've had that described to me in great detail.
Well, so, I don't think there'd be anything to stop them from cloning you, because I know that technology exists. But the thing that makes me feel that that's not the case in this particular instance is the fact that the Alma have been around for hundreds of years, and the records showing that there have been interactions with them, between them and normal everyday people are quite extensive and quite old, and that would predate the knowledge of cloning.
Yes. Well, we assume it would. But if you have alien interference going on, it could have been cloned. They could have been cloned by aliens. Just to, see.
That, of course, opens up an entirely different can of worms, you know.
Yeah. You see, in each case, there is, whether you want to call them benevolent or malevolent, there are aliens involved in the clips that I played tonight. There is some alien language going on. There's some alien influence. And I'm not saying absolutely that that's the case in terms of the Alma or a Neanderthal species that survived time without changing appearance. You see, it raises a question too. It sort of slaps the theory of evolution in the face, or punches it in the face, doesn't it? Because if that's the case, then why didn't those creatures evolve? You know, why
well,
didn't...
Well, I've often wondered about that. And for that matter, why aren't chimpanzees and gorillas evolving into,
yeah, I was
know, into
say.
Something?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. So we're thinking along the same line there. Either way you look at it.
There's a couple of different explanations, you know, that make some kind of sense. One, of course, is that there's many more branches to the so-called evolutionary tree, and some of them are dead ends in the sense that they wound up being a separate and distinct species, but they didn't become anything like a human. And the other, which is equally interesting, is that if there was some type of primate creature that lived on Earth initially and was chosen because of its anatomical structure to be hybridized by aliens to create some form of a preliminary human or a proto-human, they may have had quite a few trial runs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before they got to the point where they had the combination of physical stature and intelligence that they were looking for. And those other critters, which might be experimental rejects, if they were allowed to live out their lives, may very well have created some kind of a little clan here and there, you know. We don't really know anything about our history. That's the truth, and that's a very unfortunate thing. I mean, if we had spent one-tenth or one-one-hundredth of the money that goes into war and armament and military activities on, you know, this type of primary research, we would have such a wonderfully different point of view on the whole thing. But I understand that that'll never happen simply because it's not in their best interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of thoughts run through my head while you're talking in terms of what I know. I suppose we should even look at the characters in Washington, D.C. and figure out where they're from. Because they certainly don't act like most humans on the planet. That's for certain. And
maybe they don't have any souls or any hearts or any kind of compassion or however you want to term it. I mean, you don't have to search very far in order to find the difference between the so-called elite attitude and the attitude of the common everyday person. It's as different as night and day, most particularly where the plight of humanity is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how to respond to that other than to agree with you. When you take into consideration these ridiculous things that are going on, or the ways they try to explain away what are really disasters, on-air disasters, the average person would think that something was wrong with their TV set and then run up to it and slap it on the side, thinking that maybe there's a tube or an IC chip loose, and somehow hitting it is going to make the person talk intelligently. It's an aberration, but it's not far off of a normal newscast either. You know, if you really pay attention to what was said. What is interesting is some of the words that were interpreted for us, and I read these over the air a couple of weeks ago, describe totally different things than what they're supposed to be talking about in the story.
Well, do you have those transcripts? I mean, it would be interesting to hear what they're supposed to say.
Yeah, I have to search for them for a second. It's going to take me a few minutes. Well, maybe not. Maybe I'll find it faster than that. Yes, I got them. There, that's pretty fast. Okay. One word, garbanz. Now, they're talking about, first of all, this event at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. The woman used the word birtation. She's at an event, and she used a word that means legal or legalistic. It was an interesting word. Habitake, which means sanctuary, was another word. I think it was the second woman used the term uncatraso, which means underground or hiding places. Just a very strange word to use in that story, okay? Then the word anonsenenic, peace agreement, urtet, that was the one lady said, health urtet. And the word urtet means less available. So was she talking about Obamacare? The word Darsin, that was in the first clip, many people. Exorcist, a crazy person. That was an interesting comment there. Paras or Parak, justified. And garbanz. I think the man at the end used that word, garbanz. Dirty or filthy. So it's... I mean, I got these words translated. That they're speaking reptilian. There's no doubt about it. My intuition says it. The person that posted the clip sensed it for whatever reason, and we got confirmation from the Federation. So,
well, let me throw something out there about that.
Sure.
Let's assume that these are reptilians, and if they are, they are obviously in their human form or human guise. As a result of shape-shifting. Do you think it's possible that some of these reptilians might not even know that they're reptilians when they're in the human guise?
No, I think they do know. They're intentionally disguising themselves. In this case, we don't see any physical shape-shifting, which would cause one to think that they were being controlled from outside. Let's say they were chipped and they were receiving some kind of signal, and it was a louder signal than their thoughts, and they would start speaking the words. Or maybe they were instructed, maybe they were put into a trance or brought into some previously established level of tapping into their subconscious or their programming. But regardless of what's causing it, the phenomenon is that they began speaking in reptilian, regardless of who's behind.
Yeah, but they began speaking in reptilian about something that had nothing to do with what they were speaking about in English. And that sort of suggests that there was a shift in the mind as well as the speech.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There's definitely at least two dimensions shifting there, you know, if you want to say that. Actually, it's three-dimensional because it's speech. It's moving into space and time. So it's just another way of identifying and proving what we've been saying. So, you know, I don't know what else to say about it.
Well, I don't either. But jumping back to the previous subject, if I may, just for a moment.
Yes.
I never really concluded it. The reason I've been thinking about this is because I was watching that clip, and I don't remember the name of the woman who gives this long-winded dissertation about how the tragedy in Japan was like five or six times more destructive than Chernobyl, and the amount of radiation released, it may already be enough to terminate humanity. I don't believe that, to be honest with you. But anyway, let's assume that it was true. Well, long before all of us die off, there would be enough mutational changes, and there's always going to be somebody who survives. You know that. It's just the way it is. You know, they would probably reproduce and have some sort of offspring. They may not be as healthy, I guess is a good word, as our generation due to all of the so-called radiation. But there would be something there to carry on the remains of the human strain. Well, jumping back to the situation with the Alma, you know, there's an awful lot of proof, if you want to use that word, that comes down to us in many, many different forms in the Bible, in the Mahabharata, and the Popol Vuh, in various writings throughout time, and also in the remains of various fortifications around the planet that seem to suggest that something like nuclear war has already taken place on this Earth. And if that's the case, we can't ignore the possibility that there may have been mutant strains produced which managed to survive. And if that's the case, then the interpretation given by our most prominent anthropologists could be all wrong. I mean, even something as weird as Neanderthal or Homo erectus, you know, which we have always thought as a distinct species, which predated human beings, if you go back even farther, who knows that it didn't descend from human beings in the first place? I mean, you know, mutations caused by radiation or other problems. So there's a lot of things to consider when people start to get edgy about the true date of the world's demise.
Oh yeah, it's ridiculous spin is all it is. Just to give people something else to argue about, and to create fear. There's a certain number of people who are going to move into an elevated level of fear. You know, they're going to move from orange to red when they think about that. And it's ridiculous because this guy, Harold Camping, has predicted this many times, and he's been wrong every time. And I'll tell you right now, he's going to be wrong on Sunday again. And what will he come out with afterwards? You know, it really doesn't matter. I mean, I don't even listen to the guy. It's that suddenly this guy has become an internet phenomenon over this. Okay?
Over being wrong?
No, over his claim. You know, oh, now you have to worry. The world is going to end, you know, on the 22nd. Actually, he said the 21st. But
that's even closer. That's today.
Well,
they're
yeah.
already there.
Yeah, but if it's going to occur, I don't know how long it's going to take, but certainly we won't be around on Sunday. That will be the end.
Well, we will finish this show.
Well, I want to take an opportunity. You said something that reminded me of a song, okay? This is not a real long one, and I think it's worth playing, because you did say, Jim, that somebody would survive, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm almost confident that that will be the case.
All right. Let's check this message out and see if that's true. Of course, Jim, that's Gloria Gaynor singing I Will Survive. She actually said outer space in the first line. I think
She says you're back from outer space, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So we should make that the reptilian theme song, I think.
Well, that's fine with me.
As soon as you said that, I thought of that song. I had to play it. We get a chuckle out of it anyway. Good old Gloria, though, bringing us the truth, you see, even in a song. As I was listening to that, it's like, you know, this whole situation on this planet is described in that one song. You know, let the front door hit you where the good Lord splits you. Is that the saying?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
No, he said, let the front door hit you where the good Lord splits you.
Oh, is that what she says?
No, that's what I said.
That's what she was going to say. That's basically, if that was on record.
Yeah, there's been worse on records. that's the general theme of what she's saying, you know. Go ahead and leave. You're not wanted anymore, she said. You know.
I get a kick out of the fact that she should have changed the locks or made you give up your key, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know why she wouldn't have made that a first priority.
Yeah, well, she had to allude to Back from Outer Space. That was interesting. Very interesting line in a pop tune, you know. Well,
yeah, it is, and that's a fairly old one, too.
Mm-hmm, yeah. That's one of the most loved disco hits of all time. Can you believe that? Well, Jim,
really?
We're almost out of time here. I wanted to give you the opportunity to comment on anything we talked about tonight. We talked about a number of things. If you have any underlying thoughts or feelings that you want to share with your audience.
Well, I'd like to vent some frustration, you know.
Go ahead. Be my guest.
Ever since I was quite young, I have been interested in the mysteries of this world. And that covers a heck of a span, you know. We can talk about Noah's Ark. We can talk about, you know, the Sasquatch or the Yeti. We can talk about the whole business with UFOs. We can talk about the various lake monsters around the world, like Loch Ness and Champ and some of these other creatures. And there's just no end to the mysteries. I mean, there are just hundreds and hundreds of them. And there's also very tantalizing tidbits that come out in support of various things of that sort. One that I can remember quite vividly, which really ticked me off, was the fact that Noah's Ark was supposedly seen and photographed extensively from outer space by our most advanced military satellites, half sticking out of the ice pack on top of the mountain, and very evident that it's a wooden object and it's man-made. The reason why the location and the details were never given to the public, supposedly, is because of the fact that it would divulge the incredible power of this photographic tool as a spy, as an instrument of military spying. And they didn't want to give us that information. It's such a weak excuse. I mean, we already know that they can see your license plate number from 200 miles up, you know. So what difference does it make about Noah's Ark? But anyway, my point of bringing all this stuff up is, here's the world rushing headlong towards hell and damnation as fast as they can, because we insist upon following the lunatic fringes of these various political leaders and all these other people who have their own objectives. And it just drives me completely crazy when you stop and think about all the stuff that really would change everything and really could make an amazing difference in the level of human consciousness, solving all these various mysteries, or at least attempting to. And yet the money is never, ever put there. The only people who ever do that are eccentric individuals who have a lot of money and decide to take a little stab at something. But it's never really done in an organized manner, you know, with an absolute intent at solving a particular mystery. It's just usually this sporadic interest that somebody has, you know. But when you look at the other side of the coin, the efforts that are put towards wholesale human slaughter, development of more aggressive weapon systems, spying, you know, creating a political discord so that we can justify another war. There's absolutely no qualms whatsoever about how many millions or even billions are spent in that direction. And that has been a real thorn in my behind for many, many years. And I just wish it would be different.
Yeah, you know, you're describing something too that reminds me of my own impressions of archaeology in general, or this whole concept of anthropology and archaeology, because there are a lot of people posing as archaeologists and anthropologists that have nothing to do with it. They're involved in money laundering. It's just a front. But where you have legitimate archaeological expeditions, I think there isn't necessarily a problem to be solved. It's that the truth has to be hidden. It's not so much that we have to figure it out. The proof is there. And these archaeological expeditions pick up artifacts from who knows how far back in history, and they seem to disappear. They don't all end up in museums. They end up in private collections. And I would suspect that I wouldn't be very far off base to even assume that they actually transport these to other planets. We know they're on other planets. No matter how much they lie about it, we know. So it doesn't change the truth. And then consider when they find a 30-foot skeleton buried in Greece, maybe just a few feet from the surface of the earth. We're not talking about a bulldozer going in there. We're talking about a couple of pickaxes and some shovels and some brushes. And they expose a 30-foot skeleton. Why are they not finding thousands or millions of these? They're just finding a few. And, of course, there's no explanation at all. I mean, no, tell us about a worm hitchhiking a ride on a meteorite. That's big news. But a 30-foot-long skeleton in Greece, there, you see, they would have to admit that that was an alien being. It has all the appearances. You can imagine what it would look like with flesh and skin on its bones. Or sort of. I mean, it's a hideous skeleton. The skeleton is almost the size of the man crouching down next to it. That's how large this thing is. But we get no explanation. You know, so they're hiding an awful lot. That's the whole point. And any truth that comes out, they have to first attack the message, then they have to attack the messenger. But then they run out of options at that point. Because whether they kill the messenger or not doesn't stop the truth from being the truth. Someone else will rediscover it again. But they're panicking right now, and they're exhibiting their own fear because it's all being found out. The truth is revealing itself. We don't need their help. I mean, why would you want to ask a liar for the truth? It's as simple as, you know. So, I mean, we've got to straighten out our thinking processes and begin thinking for ourselves. And listening, when we hear something that we know inside in our innermost being is true, hold on to that and expand from that point. That's when you've touched your real self, your higher self, and you'll begin to understand things. You'll begin to see things more clearly instead of honoring the daughter of chaos, the goddess Gaia. It's sickening, the stuff that's out there. But everyone uses these words. Oh, how dare he say that about my precious goddess, the daughter of chaos? How dare he say that? Well, Jim, I want to thank you for your contribution to the show. And you actually really didn't vent all that much. But I hope you feel...
Well, I wasn't going to rant and rave and spit, you know, but I just... needed to get that off my chest because I've been thinking about it a lot lately. And, you know, I realized that when I first harbored these thoughts, I was in my teens. And I wanted to get out there and find all this stuff and explore and bring all these truths to light. And here I am now, 63 years old, and still haven't even shaken hands with a humble, ordinary, everyday Sasquatch.
Well, that's your fault for not going to Mongolia. or to South America. So, well, Jim, I want to wish you a good night and have a great weekend. And I'm going to predict that we're going to have a show next week, that the Earth will still be here. We'll still have a usurper in office. We still won't have the certificate of live birth. They'll still be trying to ram vaccines down our throat. Gasoline will probably be higher per gallon than it ever was. And we'll just keep putting out the truth.
Amen.
Amen. All right. You have a good night, Jim, and a great weekend. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and we appreciate you hanging in there through our technical difficulties. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting the show. Also over at BBS Radio tonight, we had Don Newsom on the sound and Don Newsom on the internet stream troubleshooting, and he solved the problem. Thank you, Don. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me next Monday when my special guest will be Dr. A. Truat. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.